Welcome to Keeping It Real with Frankie D, an Italian-American podcast, and I am your very proud host, Frankie D, and we can be heard at ItalianAmericanLife.com, iTunes, Stitcher, the podcast app. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and connect with us on LinkedIn. My guest today is a real go-getter, and for me, she's a type of Italian Renaissance woman. She has been a restaurateur, a writer, a food and travel writer, entrepreneur, and the author of La Dolce Vita University, An Unconventional Guide to Italian Culture from A to Z. Carla Gambescia, welcome to the show.
Ciao, Frankie.
And thank you for being here. I know you obviously are a very busy woman. You do have an event at Italy Chicago later tonight. So we are conducting this interview at the lobby of the Dana Hotel on beautiful State Street in Chicago. Thank you so much for being here. And you've done so many things, the book, restaurants, tours, bicycle tours. The book, may I say, was a Silver Prize winner for the best travel book of the year, awarded to La Dolce Vita University from the North American Travel Journalist Association. Before we get into all those things, I want to know about your Italian upbringing, because obviously that had a major effect on you.
Well, it sure did. And honestly, like, my earliest sense of myself as a child was like that I was a little girl and that I was Italian. And that sense of being Italian made me feel special. Like, and I don't even know why, but there I was, little and Italian. And I think it really certainly had everything to do with my parents, who were publicly, like, so proud to be Americans, but privately completely into our roots. And one of the things that I always look forward to on Sundays would be my father would give me my Italian lessons, which always began with vocabulary. But then we would move on to, like, storytelling, which I really liked.
So it was important for your father that you knew the language.
Absolutely. And so...
Where did you grow up, by the way?
So I grew up in South Philly.
And, oh, South Philly.
South
heavy Italian-American area.
Yeah,
that's wonderful.
Yeah. And so, but what I liked was the storytelling. And he would tell me, again, you know, appropriate for a child, like, tell me the stories of great Italian geniuses of all stripes. So I really
such as
loved,
just like, give me one.
Okay, so of course I loved Galileo for science, and he would talk about, you know, dropping the big ball and the little ball off the Tower of Pisa, and, you know, I love that story. I especially love the story of I would call him Mr. Vivaldi. Of course, he was a priest, the Frecarossa, the Red Priest, but who taught the little orphans to sing, the orphan girls to sing and play the violin, you know, or he would tell me about Michelangelo and painting the ceiling upside down and so on. So these stories, like, really, you know, they really animated, he would animate them in a way that, again, made it really relevant for a child.
May I say that I think your father is my hero, my new hero, because any man that would teach his child the Italian language and all of the great reasons to be proud is a great man. Because I wish we would do that with every child in every home. That's one of my big things. So that is tremendous. Did you go to Italy as a child?
My first trip was, you know, when I was eight, and of course it was highlight to go to the top of the Leaning Tower and to know where he dropped the balls. And, you know, of course, I was madly in love with Venice, as you would expect that, you know, a child would be. And then, like, I didn't mention my mother, who she had her own particular, like, interests that she, you know, she instilled in me. Of course, it wasn't highly, it wasn't as, you know, exciting as my father's story. So my mother loved Renaissance art. And so from, like, a very early age, I could tell you, like, which Madonna was a Botticelli, which Madonna.
I got to be honest, that's incredible. All these things are very nice.
And so, like, they would trot me out for company and, like, you know, demonstrate, like, this, like, you know, preternatural ability to, like, know my artists early on.
And where does the family, where are the roots in Italy?
Okay, so my mother's family is from Basilicata. And I've actually been to the town of Acciatora, which is up in the Piccolo Dolomiti. I have no idea really how they got to the boat because it's pretty remote. And also my father's family is from Abruzzo, just outside of Sulmona.
Outside of Sulmona, La Città dei Confetti.
Yeah, yeah.
They're very well known for the confetti
and
candies.
And where, of course, you know, I knew about Ovid when I was little. Most people don't know about Ovid when they're big.
Well, I tell you, hearing this upbringing kind of makes sense now about your book and your background. It obviously had a major influence on you, and you've done wonderful things with it. Let's get started first with, was the restaurant first? Is that one of the first things you did before the bicycle tour?
So I was actually, and this all explains things too. So I went to the University of Pennsylvania and I have my master's degree at MBA in business, and I was in marketing and I worked in advertising. And so, you know, the book is like little small bites. Okay, nothing is very long. So I'm a packager of information, and I think like the narrative arc of a book where you have character development, it's not really me. So these like little mini essays, these little wonderful nuggets of information, you know, are a product of someone who like background is a marketer and a communicator, and I try to distill things.
Was it a difficult book to write, though?
No.
It wasn't. Because it seemed like it, because it's made up of 165 mini essays. You explore everything from A to Z, and you really give it, you research it. I mean, there's a lot of information about these things that I never knew, and probably that the average man wouldn't know.
Well,
so I enjoyed it because I was learning things.
That so pleases me to hear that, because my goal, like a test for me, was I wouldn't write an essay or include it if I didn't learn something, if I didn't surprise myself. If I hadn't unearthed a piece of information that was like, wow, isn't that cool or fun? So that was a test for me, because I really want to, you know, bring Italian culture to life in a way that is exciting for people. And again, there's more discovery. I mean, it's an unconventional guide because there are no opening times, there are no closing times. But it's, again, these little insights and nuggets that, you know,
over the course of history. I mean, you've taken 2,000 years worth of Italy.
Right.
And put it into a book with 165 mini essays. And since we're talking about it, I made some notes of a couple things that I really enjoyed. Number one, the nativity scenes. I never knew
Saint Francis
of Assisi created, invented, what's the proper word?
Well, he brought to life.
He brought to life a nativity scene.
Yeah, isn't that fun? I love that.
That's incredible, because that's a staple figure for every Italian-American home for Christmas.
Okay, that was, of course, something my father taught me, you know, and I learned all the St. Francis stories and the Gubbio Wolf. There's a lot of St. Francis in there, and that's certainly...
Well, apparently he's done a lot of things, so...
Well, he has, but, you know, he was something, like, a figure my father... very much loved. But the nativity scenes, you know, it's just incredible, because part of his thing was to bring scripture to life for the people. And that, you know, one way to do that was to reenact, you know, the nativity with live animals and so on. And he was like a reformer within the church, you know, and he got permission from the Pope to do that. He didn't just like say, oh, okay, like, let's do a nativity scene here in Assisi. But yeah.
The next point that I really liked was the rock star of the Renaissance, Raffaello Sanzio, which is more well known as Raphael.
Right.
So I didn't realize that Raphael was such a major player, because I don't think it, I don't know, just the average guy, once again, because I'm just an average guy, I didn't realize like how big of a player he was.
Well, he was obviously, you know, extremely, he died relatively young, 39, unexpectedly, but he was certainly the toast of Rome. And, you know, part of that was he was attractive, he was charming, you know, versus, say, Michelangelo, who was, you know, this, you know...
Who was a little bit jealous of Raphael.
He was, but, you know, he was also this, like, curmudgeon, asocial curmudgeon, you know, who just really was all about his work. And then, of course, you know, Raphael was kind of a ladies' man, and, you know, whatever.
Nice.
And it was fun.
Yes.
And, yeah, and then, of course, part of two, I, like, love him very much. He was my mom's favorite artist.
Is that right?
And they say he painted with the most graceful of grace. And of course, his stuff is really very, you know, beautiful, and has harmony and balance and, you know, whatever. But yes, I loved him.
Another point that I really enjoyed was Rome's decorator, Gian Lorenzo Bernini.
Yeah.
That, once again, I had heard the name. I wasn't super familiar with him. And yes, I found that very interesting.
And what's so interesting was the Pope was like, from early on, they identified him as like the next Michelangelo. And, you know, he was incredible because he, you know, this was during the time of the Reformation. And a lot of how, when you have the experience of going into Rome and you have, you know, the Bridge of the Angels, the Pont Sant'Angelo, all of that was to really, for the pilgrimage of, you know, pilgrims came to Rome and they went over the bridge and the statues were to reenact the suffering of Christ. And then you come to the colonnade that embraces you as a pilgrim before you reach the Vatican. And, you know, all of his art is so gestural and so dramatic and so beautiful.
I definitely, the next time I go, when I hope soon, but I definitely want to go visit these places.
And then
now.
His sculptures are amazing. And there was the book, it was, what was it? You know, the guy who wrote the Da Vinci Code. He has a book called
Tom Hanks? No, I'm just kidding.
You know, Dan Brown.
Okay.
So he has something called Something of the Angels, and actually all the murders take place at different Bernini statues. So,
is that right?
Because there's one statue that has the element of water, one statue that has the, and he wrote it before the Da Vinci Code. I actually thought it was a better book.
Very interesting. And the last point that I wanted to bring up was a section on cookies that are called brutti ma buoni. So ugly but good. Now, the funny thing was, I'm reading this, and I've only heard of those and only had those here in Chicago because my good friend, Francesco Di Maggio, who has a place called Di Maggio Cafe Restaurant, he's at 7300 West Lawrence Avenue, which is just west of Harlem Avenue. He makes these cookies, and he calls them belli brutti. So I took the liberty to go there last night. I got a box for you to take with you.
Thank you so much.
They are delicious cookies. But it's funny. So I got to talking to him when I explained I was going to do this interview and I read this book and they're called Brutti Ma Buoni. And he said where he's from, because he's from Sicily, he said that they call them Belli Brutti. Yeah. And like everything else in Italy, they have different names. So I just found it interesting because I never heard of these cookies.
Right.
Until my friend. And then you had a whole section in the book about them.
Yeah.
And they are delicious. They're shaved almonds with chocolate over them. And I guess they're kind of ugly looking, but
They're blobby,
but they taste delicious.
I know.
So
the amazing disappearing cookie. Well, one of the really beautiful things about the Italian language and the Italians in general, because like language is this great window on a culture, is that Italians will take something like really kind of ordinary, and then they, you know, they have a sense of humor and they'll give it a name that's really fun. You know, like, so brutti ma buoni. I mean, this is like only Italians would name a cookie brutti ma buoni. Or, you know, think about, you know, salta in bocca. It has nothing to do with veal and sage. It's jump in the mouth. It's like fun, you know, or
tiramisu.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
I was thinking of that.
Or, you know, puttanesca. I mean, so they take these ordinary things, but they, you know, they bring, you know, some humor and charm to this, like, day-to-day experiences. It's a beautiful thing.
They are masters at it, yes. Yeah. So La Dolce Vita University Unconventional Guide. It tells you about food, wine, art, architecture, history, literature, film, style, everything. Very, very interesting. I've been to Italy many, many times, and I just kept turning the page and going, wow, I didn't know that. Wow, I didn't know that. Wow, I didn't know that. And like I said, the next time I get to go, I hope soon, I would love to go visit some of these things you touched about in the book. So excellent book. Excellent. So now, other things that you've done in your Renaissance past, the Giro del Gelato bicycle tour. The Giro del Gelato. Tell me about that.
So one of my good friends owns a bike tour company, Ciclismo Classico. They're out of Boston. And they really are the best, you know, operator if you're interested.
In Italy or here?
They specialize in Italian active travel. And so I've taken probably a dozen trips with them. And I was then a partner at a company called Ciao Bella Gelato. And it was my idea that we would do a really fun tour that, you know, it was so popular, you know, these wine tours, become a wine expert, do all this tasting. And with gelato, it's a lot easier to imagine that over the course of a week, you can become a gelato expert.
So what is the tour? Tell me about that. So I sign up. What am I going to do?
So what you're going to do is you're going to take a bike, and you're going to ride a bike, and it could be an e-bike. So it's like the e-bike makes it, you know.
The e-bike?
The e-bike, which makes it accessible for everyone. So you can either be cycling under your own power or 25%, 50%, or 100% power.
Once again, I never heard of that, so I don't get out a lot.
So you can go on this. And so we, like, we'll take a region, like say we're in Sicily, and then we, you know, experience what Sicily has to offer, plus the best gelateria through a particular region. And so one of the great things about Italy, and everyone loves about Italy, is gelato, gelato, gelato. Like, I'm going to have gelato like three times a day. So you get to do all this tasting, unlimited, you know, gelato. And it's great because you're on a bike and you're kind of riding it off, right? And then what happens is, just like with, like, there's language to describe different coffees, there's language to describe different wines, you know, there's a vocabulary. So I would teach the vocabulary of gelato, what's good gelato, what to look for in gelato, what's not good.
Oh, so they're learning about gelato besides eating it.
And then, you know, there's a demo, we go to great places, people have a gelato diary, they keep track of what they like.
That's great.
But, I mean, what to me was hilarious about this trip was the first couple days, everyone thought everything was good. Okay, they're like, yeah. And then by the end of the trip, they're like, oh, it's crummy, it's crystallized, it's this, it's that. They're throwing it away because they have now become a connoisseur and they know the difference. So, you know, in Italy, there's a lot of gelato and there's a lot of good gelato, but there's also like a lot of like factory produced, average, you know, like a good way, like always a signal is pistachio. When you see pistachio and it's like really like green, okay, that's bad.
That's bad.
That's bad because actually the natural color of pistachio is kind of a muddy, that's a muddy brown.
Oh, it's a muddy brown.
Okay, so you can't let these colors are like, oh, man, eye candy, but like maybe not so good. And then also you'll see some of these like swirly designs that like are very uniform. So that's almost like factory produced.
It's not the human element.
So there are like visual cues and then, you know, color cues that you can know if it's, you know, really good. There's, you know, a lot of really great artisanal gelato throughout. I think it gets better the further south you go. That's not a rule, but there's a generality to it. And I just, you know, and then it's also like it's hot and it's fun.
So it goes hand in hand.
And it's amazing. And then when I had my restaurant, we made gelato. We had 18 flavors daily. And I made the gelato.
And that was the Ciao Bella Gelato
company?
No,
I made my own stuff.
He's done so many things. You got me confused.
We had a batch freezer. And so I was involved with Ciao Bella, but, you know, as a marketing person, all of that. But when I had the restaurant, when people would be, I wasn't bugging them. I'd be downstairs, like, working on my flavors. And
so where was the restaurant located?
So I converted the train station. It was just north of New York City. And it was really wonderful to convert a historic building. And I did a lot of what you see, like, in Italy, where you have old architecture and, like, new furniture, kind of, you know, juxtaposing old and new. It's very Italian to do that in a way that's really harmonious. So I had a great look.
And it was called?
It was called Via Avanti.
Via
Avanti for the way forward, like Via, and then the contraction for Avanti. So it was, you know, Italian cuisine. Okay, so I would make my own gelato. We had 18 flavors daily. It was also really interesting because I discovered that, you know, certain flavors, you know, really popular Italian flavors, things that I love, I would have to kind of give them a different name. Okay, so
what were the main flavors you think the most popular?
Well, for example, something like, you know, Gianduia, it's a great flavor of chocolate hazelnut, you know, but instead of calling it John Julia, you know, it was much better if I just called it, you know, Nutella. Or I loved doing chocolate orange, but this was like, oh, it scared people, but I called it Sicilian chocolate, and then it sold better than regular chocolate. So
I see. You know, so you kind of described it, made a new name, and I think it was more appealing for the people, and they understood it better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's great. So you had the restaurant a long time?
I had it for a decade.
A decade. That's a tough life, correct?
Yeah, and you know what? It's okay. We didn't. We lost our lease because of it's a complicated story, but like I'm totally okay with it, and I love to be. I've been liberated. You know, so that's...
It shores up time for you, and especially someone as creative as you are, to do other things.
And then also to take longer trips, because, you know, I couldn't be away for too long, you know, and I could only go away certain times of the year. So.
And everything happens for a reason, so it probably worked out for the best. What is your current and future plans?
So...
Because you take me as a woman that's always got their brain... moving and thinking about things and wanting to do things.
Well, first of all, I really see that I see myself as an ambassador of culture. And one of the things, I mean, I really love speaking, and I've been, you know, speaking across the country at different cultural centers. And I have a number of different programs, like what I'm doing in Italy this evening is a trivia challenge. That's the thing that you saw at Casa Italia.
Very nice. Yes.
But I also do lectures. And I really enjoy that, and I feel that what I'm really trying to do is to combine information with entertainment and really work at that intersection. And
that's not an easy thing.
And to do that and reach people, because I feel like, you know, we're getting, the culture is changing, and that we really need to, you know, remind people of and have Italy not be lost in, you know, people intermarrying, all of these things that are happening, and it concerns me. And so I feel that this is my mission, to keep it alive, to bring it to life. Also, with these trivia challenges, I've been working with universities and high schools to do this, to bring it to life for kids, you know, in a way that makes it really fun. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm also, from all my travels, I taken over 20,000 photographs, and it's something that I love. And so I created the blog that I sent to you over the weekend, Postcards from the Booth, which are these slideshows of around the theme. You know, I'll take a particular theme. It's 20 pictures or so. And the idea is they're like little mini vacations. You know, rather, I think people are like prefer to see pictures than read too much. You know, and so
I agree with that.
Yeah, so this is a blog. It's like could be a little look forward to mini vacation that I'm going to be posting every 2 weeks. And just again to say, like, Italy is the most amazing place, inspire you to make your next trip abroad to Italy.
Well, you are quite the ambassador for the country of Italy.
Yeah.
So if somebody wants to see these postcards from the booth, how do they get
Okay, so they just go to, you know, postcardsfromtheboot.com. And there are currently 4 slideshows posted, and they can subscribe to the blog. And also, I want people to submit pictures. And ultimately, you know, right now they're my pictures, but I'd also like people to, you know, share their best pictures. And also, I'd like to share other people's pictures, and of course, they'll be acknowledged on this blog. So
that's a great idea. And as far as the book, how does one acquire the book?
Okay, so you can get your book on the book on Amazon, and it's also in area bookstores. So you can ask your area bookstore and get it on Amazon. And I have books for either a part 2 or another book. So I'm thinking about all of these things.
I told you, you're always thinking.
I am.
You have... You're very creative, and you know, may I say that just the words you said about trying to keep our people alive, our culture alive, our past alive, because
yes.
One of my fears is that all of these great things that Italians have done, with every generation, we lose more knowledge of that. And I don't want that to be lost.
And what's amazing is there's so many, you know, day-to-day things that people take for granted that they don't attribute to, you know, they don't understand the Italian contribution. I mean, they're even just like little day-to-day things. Like, do you know why carpaccio is called carpaccio?
I don't.
I mean, so you, so this is, actually, you didn't do, there's an essay about it. But, oops.
I failed one, okay. Yes, 165.
But I mean, they're just all on so many things. And, you know, even through, you know, the derivation of different words and so on. So it's with us in everyday things. And part of, I feel like part of the book, too, is it makes the enjoyment of day-to-day things that you didn't even recognize as, you know, having its roots in, you know, Italian culture. Just things you take for granted that are part of our contribution, Italians' contribution to the world at large.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, and please keep doing this because we need things like this out there for us to survive.
I promise.
Please keep doing it. Thank you for the interview. The book, La Dolce Vita University, I highly advise it. And once again, Carla, thank you. It was a pleasure talking to you. And as we always do on the Keeping It Real with Frankie D show, we end with a little slogan. Stay sharp, stay strong, and stay Italian. Thank you to all the listeners, and have a great Italian-American day.
Come belle c'è la luna, brille strette, strette con e butto belle fastidia sotto il cielo di Roma. Down each avenue or via street or strada, you can see him disappearing two by two on an evening in Roma. Do they take him for espresso? Yeah, I guess so. On each lover's arm, a girl I wish I knew on an evening in Roma. Though there's grinning and mandolining in sunny Italy, the beginning has just begun when the sun goes down. So please meet me in the plaza near your casa. I am only one, and that is one too few on an evening in Roma. Don't know what the country's coming to, but in Rome do as the Romans do. Will you, on an evening in Roma? Come belle c'è la luna, brille strette, strette con e butto belle fasteggia sotto il cielo di Roma. Don't know what the country's coming to, but in Rome do as the Romans do. Will you, on an evening in Roma, sotto il cielo di Roma, on an evening in Roma.